Copyright.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to the world.
Oh, you're talking to the world. You're not talking to me.
No.
Oh, hey there, listener.
Vancouver.
Yeah, how's it going out there?
Internets.
In sunny, rainy Vancouver. You're tuning to CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Copyright Experiment.
We discuss issues in digital media copyright, especially focused on music. And then we play mixes of freely available dance, electronic, hip hop, left field, whatever.
Which you're going to hear in a bit.
And if you like what you hear and you want to hear previous shows and get download links to anything you hear, you can go on our blog at copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. You can also listen to CITR online at citr.ca.
Some of you might be doing that right now.
You might even want to like their Facebook page.
Oh, yeah. Their Facebook page.
CITR is pretty sweet.
Lots of cool updates. They often give lots of tickets away. Mm-hmm. We don't really give tickets away on our show. We could, but we don't. we got other stuff to talk about.
It's too much going on in the
world.
It's
pretty stressful. And, you know, I don't know. It's kind of unfair giving away tickets at 11 o'clock on a Thursday night, too.
Yeah.
Unfair to the listeners. But if you're listening now live, you're a dedicated listener. And we appreciate your listenership.
And if you are listening as well right now, you might want to watch out for the explicit language. Hide your kids.
Yeah, hide your kids. Anyone else who objects to questionable language. If you hear a whirring right now, I don't know if you guys can hear it. It's really hot in here, so we turned a fan on. I don't know if that's radio etiquette proper, but proper etiquette.
We're doing it. Fuck it, I'm hot.
Yeah, we're hot in here. I guess where else it's hot?
China.
It's pretty hot in China. Not everywhere in China, but it's pretty hot in most parts of China. And that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about
the heating copyright.
Yeah, the heated debate on copyright in China.
Whoa.
Yeah, and we kind of want to talk about this, one, because it's very different from the way copyright's treated in the West. And I think it's an important kind of perspective to have on just the overall what copyright means to a society and a culture. And it kind of just allows you to think about things, you know, how integral or how necessary copyright may be to the culture that we appreciate or that we would like to live in.
I think it also gives us a little perspective. You know, we're not, the way we do copyright isn't the only codified way to do this, you know?
The idea that intellectual property is an author's right is not totally, it's not the same kind of right, say, maybe as, you know, freedom of ownership or speech or things like that. Anyway, so let's get into it.
You want to start with the history?
Yeah, I think we can start with history. So basically, since like the Cultural Revolution of like the 1960s in China, which established like a really strong communist government, there were kind of really strong attempts to reduce kind of individual thought and independent ways of doing things unrelated to the state. And so the idea of the state controlling everything was pushed for a really long time, and it kind of created the industrial manufacturing behemoth that was China for a long time, and still kind of is, but is kind of slowly declining. But so that's kind of the context for where copyright comes from in China, and the idea that the very idea of copyright is kind of part of Western idealism, I would say, because in kind of neoliberal Westernism, there's the idea of the individual is very important, and individuals have certain immutable freedoms, but that's not the case in styles of communism, which would say that the state is above all, and that the state kind of owns everything, and the individual works to create a better state for everyone. So in that sense, communism actually rejects copyright, which is probably why it took until 1990 for China to even draft the first copyright law.
And just for perspective, in Western society, we had copyright laws since 1710.
Yes. Which, if you listen to our first show, you would know.
Yes. So a couple hundred years difference there, almost.
Yeah.
A little over, actually.
Intellectual property in the West is very mature. I don't know if I would say it's mature in the sense that it's proper, but it's certainly...
It's old.
It's old, yeah. So that's kind of the context in where the first copyright law was created, and it's kind of significant because it took actually a decade to ratify it, and it was also significant because it was one of the first kind of pushes against the idealism of the state and that the state actually controlled everything. So, and the first copyright law, kind of while reaffirming that the state was in control of everything, it kind of gave concessions that, you know, authors do have some rights in relation to their work.
And just to put it into perspective as to why China was doing this, they wanted to be part of the WTO, and so they had to meet TRIPS compliance, which is the...
Well, that was a bit later, I think.
Well, it's 2001.
2001, yeah. So
maybe a year later than that.
I mean, the first copyright law was 1990.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they kind of dipped their feet into the water a bit, and I think throughout the 90s, they realized that, you know, if they wanted to become a formidable trade partner, then they needed to join the World Trade Organization, and with that comes the TRIPS Agreement, as you say. And the TRIPS Agreement stands for the Trade-Related Aspects of Intellectual Property, and it basically sets out baseline minimal laws that countries that sign on to the WTO have to abide by. And some you can have even more strict laws, but it says a baseline so that everyone is kind of trading on the same kind of playing field.
So even though you can, you know, find bootleg copies of whatever for very cheap in China, they do have copyright laws, and they are up to international standards.
So it kind of took them a little while to actually get up to those standards, but yeah. it kind of with the amendment that created brought it up to TRIPS standards, they created 13 economic rights, which you'll find are probably mirrored quite closely in the West, and those are right of reproduction, distribution, rental, exhibition, performance, screening, broadcasting, making cinematographic works, and communicating through an information network. And all of those, if you've listened to our show enough, we've kind of talked about all of those aspects of copyright. And what's interesting in the Chinese version of copyright law is the communicating through an information network, because it's not totally explicit in a lot of Western countries, and it actually gives power for people to go after P2P users directly, which is not as straightforward in
like the U.S., for example.
Yeah, in the U.S. We talked about how safe harbors really make it a complex issue, and there's a lot of the incremental changes in the laws in the U.S. By being a product of a mature IP market have made it really difficult to think about users in the online world.
And then sort of the next development that happened in the Chinese copyright law was in 2007, when the U.S. attempted to stop Chinese dissemination of U.S. copyrighted materials. So things were copyrighted in the U.S., they were found in China, and they didn't have any copyright there, and so they were like, okay, let's go ahead and sell this for really cheap or whatever. That kind of thing would happen. And the U.S. wanted this to stop because they were losing a lot of revenue, they, I guess, determined. And they were kind of successful, but they didn't fully get the U.S. copyright.
They're successful in the eyes of the WTO.
Yeah.
But China didn't really enforce the rulings very strongly.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a larger symptom of just copyright in China, even since 1990 when it was first enacted, is that even though the law was in place, because it was just a brand new concept, it didn't really take hold in people's actions and activities for a long time. And even now today, it's still not really recognized as a an inherent right as it is in the West.
Yeah, they were saying between like 2007 and 2009, so this is after, you know, the U.S. sort of successfully got them to comply with the WTO standards, there was only like $5,000 in like damages.
Well, that was the average.
Per year average. Yeah.
Average. Yeah, so that's on the enforcement side, which we'll talk about a bit more in a minute. But yeah, so if you were to sue someone for copyright infringement, the average compensation through a court of law was $5,000.
I mean, it was paltry, you know, compared to the U.S. with his, you know, million-dollar cases and stuff.
I find that actually pretty interesting, though, because it also... so in China, there's actually two ways that you can find justice or whatever for a copyright infringement, and one is through an administrative council, I guess, and one is through the courts. And it kind of have by giving really small payouts like that, they are actually disincentivizing large companies, for example, that can't afford legal fees and to actually go after small players because it's not really profitable for them, where in the USA it's extremely profitable, and the RIAA has the power to prosecute up to $100,000 per infraction. Which then made the headlines in kind of the mid-2000s of people who were getting sued for millions of dollars for downloading a few songs.
Yeah, so I guess yeah, in that sense it is, it's I wouldn't say more reasonable, but it's at least...
It
doesn't incentivize up. Like the sort of like suing... Like rampant suing that we see a lot in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of holds the big players at bay from bullying people who commit, you know, well, in my eyes, minor infractions. So like I said, there's kind of two ways that you can go about getting justice for your copyright infringement if you're an author. And one is through the courts, which we just talked about, but also through these administrative councils. The main one being the National Copyright Administration of China. And you can basically say, hey, this is happening. Can you stop it? And they'll kind of take action on it. There's actually a lot of problems with that as well, because they usually focus on really high-profile cases. They try to go for the busts and, you know, take down the big players rather than, you know, treating everyone who has a complaint fairly. So there's some problems there as well.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting... topic just to think about. I mean, you know, there's two different systems that both kind of have the same goal, and there are differences to the way they do things.
I think it's something that the West doesn't have at all.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
Any countries in the West.
And I find it very interesting, and I think in some ways it could create more loopholes and it could create less, because let's say one of them is focusing on certain things and missing other things, and the other one's doing, you know, a similar kind of thing. Maybe they have overlap, and maybe they kind of cover each other's backs where they aren't doing so well. Or potentially maybe because there's more of them, they have more little problems that people can try to nitpick and get through. So I don't know. We're kind of still in the history making of seeing how it's working out for them.
Yeah, and... that kind of segues into the digital market a bit, but I did want to say that I think the administrative route is interesting, because it seems like a more democratic friendly way of enforcing copyright. Because I mean, the only people that actually go after people for copyright infringement now are people who hold massive amounts of intellectual property and have a lot of cash to kind of go after people for that. And you obviously see that all the time in the West, but I mean, you don't see individuals going after them a lot of times. And even this happened recently, even if an individual does know that copyright infringement is happening, they often won't do it, and then when they die, their estate has some amount of money attached to it, and their family goes after them. And so copyright infringement enforcement kind of happens for almost the completely wrong reasons. And if there was an administrative arm that dealt with that, I think you might see a bit more fairness to authors in the sense that they're actually seeking damages for legitimate reasons.
But then on the flip side, we have the problem earlier that we talked about, where the administration kind of picks and chooses the cases that will give them, you know, will look good for them, basically.
Yeah, because, I mean, in a court, you hear everything, but as an independent panel, I guess, can do what they want. In the digital age in China, China has, apparently they have 46% internet penetration in their whole country, which is pretty significant, especially when you consider how many people are in China, which kind of calculates out to 618 million internet users, which is a lot of users. And so in the internet age, there's kind of been a continuation of basically the attitude towards copyright. And in the West, we saw this kind of break open with things like Napster. But in China, it hasn't really gone away. And in the West, it has through these like high profile court cases. It's kind of forced illegal downloading into the underground, and you know, it's characterized as stealing and things like that. But and I think in China, for a lot of individuals, the idea of paying for music is so like foreign to them. And I think that maybe that might be one reason why in China there's more of a focus on pop music more than a diverse kind of musical culture in the West. In China, there's the way that music is often characterized is through charts, like who's the best people on this chart, and artists and labels and stuff like that are less relevant to people.
This is kind of a side note, but I've heard that SoundCloud is blocked in China. Is that true? Do you know?
I'm not sure, actually.
That's what I've heard. So, I mean, that's an interesting side of it in itself.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
You going to go look it up?
I am.
Okay. So basically, there's this under... The major labels have kind of said for a long time that they've kind of characterized music as, you know, in the form of charts and... who is the popular music. So they're kind of telling people what they should listen to, and it's kind of created a culture, and because people aren't willing to pay for music, it's kind of created a culture that, you know, music is very disposable, and that music is something you just listen to very passively. You're not really an active part of a musical culture. And I think that is probably just because things like intellectual property aren't treated as seriously. And I mean, you know, it's kind of just a theory. I don't really have any evidence specifically for that, but it kind of makes sense that might happen given the goals of intellectual property protection and stuff like that. But now in the kind of more modern internet age, there's a lot of people are realizing in China that, and this is something that's also happening in the West, is that a lot of people like to listen to music, but they don't like to keep track of music, and they don't like to know who it is or anything like that. They often want specific music for a very specific function, so they don't really care what they're listening to, but they want music that serves things like their mood or the function that they're doing and things like that. And that's actually a big thing that's happening in the West too, with digital music services, curated playlists, and for example, the Beats Music service that just launched recently, their whole sales point is that you basically, they have this function, it's their main function of the service, that you type in how you're feeling, what you want to listen to, what kind of things you want to listen to, and it creates something for you. And so a lot of people think this is the direction that at least mass music consumption is going, which is probably a fair way to characterize it, because the people, the masses that listen to music don't really... If you don't really care who is playing, you're not going to pay for them. And so by making it a low cost, either even ad supported service, you're kind of telling people that, you're not telling people, but you're showing people that, hey, there's an option for you that you can use that's ad supported, and it serves the function you want rather than the, you know, making you a player in the participatory music culture.
Then, like, as far as China, how does that, what do you think that means for their future in terms of copyright and...
Well, so right now, a lot of the major tech companies in China are all starting streaming music services up, which is kind of signaling, which is the way that in the West, P2P kind of declined. And I mean, it still exists, but it's a lot less important now, or a lot less important now than it was, because streaming services are making access to music a lot easier.
Isn't like Baidu doing something with that?
Yeah, Baidu has a service.
Like the main search engine in China. Yeah.
Yeah, and QQ has their service too, which is owned by Tencent, one of the biggest services. Nokia has a music service. So I mean, they're all kind of jumping in there with services now, but they're actually running into the problems that say Spotify is being accused of a lot, which is that their royalties are basically nothing. And it's even stronger in China, because there's less of a monetary value on music anyway. So, but it's at least kind of creating a culture or a kind of a behavioral set that, you know, if you want to listen to music, you do it through these services. And that's kind of the one way to control your intellectual property, which is basically to actually control the physical places where it is, right? Or the digital places where it is. Streaming services, I mean, they're easy to access, but you know, it's still an access service. You don't own anything on it, and which allows the people that put it on to kind of hold on to control of all of it.
So I guess what we're really seeing is that China's changing a lot in the way that they are dealing with music and sort of the dissemination, and also the reimbursement to the artists.
Yeah, I would say so. I think they're changing in two ways that are both becoming similar to the West, but also independent. So the one way they're changing is through law. They're kind of creating laws that are more similar to Western laws, but they're also changing in the sense that the major cultural, the thing that pushes culture forward is now, in China, is now the same thing that pushes culture forward in Western countries, which is internet. And they're using kind of the same mechanisms to develop ecosystems around things like music and intellectual property pieces.
Yeah, and in the last few years, we've seen statistically more injunctions being filed, and even injunctions coming from apparently foreign plaintiffs.
Right.
Which, yeah, I found really interesting.
Well, I mean, that's like American companies, yeah, trying to stop the piracy of their films in China.
Which is something, you know, that maybe 20 years ago
probably wouldn't have happened.
Wouldn't be able to happen.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, it's definitely changing. I, you know, I can't say if it's moving forward or whatever, but it's changing.
It's becoming more Western, yeah. So take that as you will. Whether the low kind of idea of copyright as a not lay an immutable right is a good thing or a bad thing is it's kind of hard to say. We can't really say. But, I mean, it is interesting to me, at least, that for a long time China's music culture has been very pop-focused and just driven specifically by giant labels. And, I mean, it is in the U.S. too, but I think there's a lot of, as far as I can tell, a lot more subcultural music in the West than in China. And that may have something to do with their treatment of intellectual property.
So, yeah, well, this has kind of been a brief primer of...
Yeah.
China's copyright laws and sort of where they're at, not where they're at, but just what's going on there in terms of their digital media copyright laws. And if you want to read the articles that we read to bring you this information, we'll post them on our blog at the end of this show afterwards, mm-hmm, sometime, and you can read and read and read until your heart is content. The blogs that these articles are from have plenty of other articles which are interesting. I think Tim might have gotten lost on that blog for a while.
The China music blog?
Yeah, reading other things.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I'm very fascinated with China overall, so it's very... And I think for a long time there hasn't been a lot of media on how China operates.
Yeah.
And so, but it's starting to open up now, which is interesting. So there's a lot you can read out there, even things not related to music too, so...
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to play some music, so stay tuned. What am I playing first? I don't even remember what I'm playing first, but it's a new remix by Hexadecibel and Subcore, so stay tuned for that. Hexadecibel, Local Boy.
You're listening to CITR 101.9. This is a copyright experiment. We'll be right back.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the UBC and Kitsilano area at
The Australian Boot Company, Banyan Books and Sound, The Bike Kitchen, The Cove, Dentry's Pub, Displace Hashery, Limelight Video, The Eatery, Fresh's Best Salsa, Gargoyle's Bar and Grill, Lotusland Tattoo, Nuba Kitsilano, Prussian Music, Rufus's Guitar Shop, and the UBC Bookstore.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus, or go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always...
Explore the arts this winter at League Square Community Arts Village. They're offering an exciting lineup of visual and performing arts programs this winter, including capoeira, Brazilian dance, and martial arts for 3 to 12-year-olds, parent and taught jam sessions, the iGirl Empowerment and Art Workshop for ages 9 to 12, and adult classes in digital photo editing and photography, just to name a few. Registration is available online at experienceit.ca or call 604-927-7529 for a full listing of arts and culture programs in Port Coquitlam. For more information on Lee Square, please visit portcoquitlam.ca/arts or call 604-927-8400.
And welcome back to CITR 101.9, the copyright experiment. It's Thursday at 11:28, and we're about to get into our mixed music portion of the show. This is all freely available music, mixed up live by our co-host and DJ, Tim Autonomy. First off, we'll be playing Hexadecibel Subcore Remix, and... And this is Of Mary J. Blige. So enjoy.
If I can't love myself enough to know when it's time to let go. If I mean anything to you, would it make everything alright?
Thank you.
Track here on 1080p. Before that, we heard Seventh Wonder, a track called All Night. Pablo here, APRN's new release. Pretty groovy.
I'm
Prison Guard. What's that called? The Sound.
To your motherfucking neck, K's all in my trunk, so you best to get a chopper. It's nothing but goon action. I ain't talking walk a flocker. That 275 goons follow to a fucking gang. Fucking walk a flocker flame in a fucking hole. Die right now, bullet or a fucking shank. Niggas always trying to be the hardest in the fucking prank.
Never take time to the threats. I be off in your neck, but you reach for the tech. Send me, niggas gon' hear me, then fear me. But you green in my Philly, turn up. Hold up your niggas if you run up. Tryna act hard with your gun up. I shoot your son up, round to the sun up. Little finger flash, that's a one up. I'm a young brother, dog by mother. Kirby said cut him with his brother. Lead them boys wet like water. Off with his neck, posing with his set. I don't take kind of the threats, take kind of the threats. Ratchet for life, I'm hood. Tryna smoke bad, but I'm good. Bust a nigga head for the cake. Jumping over gates, can't wait. Nine to the face, fuck nigga, you ain't safe.
Denzel Curry, Prom Night Edition of Threats.
We don't take common threats, nigga. We don't take common threats. Yes, 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 yes. We don't take common threats. We don't take common threats.
Jared. Off with RJ Trips and Cosmic Quest.
heater on me. But I was too cool, swinging my chain left and right on that hypnosis. Tell these motherfuckers to focus. Gave the hope to the hopeless without no stress. Nigga, I ain't flexing. Walk up to you, probably be texting to the next man, come attack me. But you know you can't fuck with Louis B. Should I put an end to this? Do what I love next to my arch nemesis. Niggas like I'm playing games, Sega Genesis. Trying to be my own, got my own Genesis. All my niggas dressed like it's a funeral. Wearing black, getting high on pharmaceuticals. All my niggas dressed like it's a funeral. Wearing black, getting high on pharmaceuticals. Like it's a funeral, nigga, like it's a funeral. Wearing black, getting high on pharmaceuticals. Like it's a funeral, nigga, like it's a funeral. Wearing black, getting high on pharmaceuticals.
Between an actual human and a beast depends upon his ability to subject a beast. Perception with metaphors and our schema. A beamer, dissolve an image as a concept just to get this greener. Jealous motherfucker fucking with that round nigga. You look like pow pow, that's the round nigga. Talking cheap, I leave y'all weak and have your mama weep. Then your family grief, make your everlasting memory.
In the sky, if that's your dealer, if that's your dealer.
They say look him in the eyes,
look him in the eyes.
If that's your killer,
and that's your killer.
Thomas White.
She love me.
Yeah, I'm the only one to get the job done. I don't know.
nigga. Super, 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 super fly bitches. Super fly, super fly, super fly, super, 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 super fly bitches. Super fly nigga. Super, 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 super fly bitches. Super fly, me and my nigga shitting when we step out in the light. He blowing on a loud blunt height on a flight. Tell a guy take a kite, nigga night like a dike. I don't like niggas that don't like the bite. What I want when I drum, I go dumb, then it's done. Where the fun? Give me tongue, keep the cum. Bitches soft like a bum. Bringing bars, better run. Do my thing, have you sprung? Put my name on your lung, take your brain, use a bomb. They can't keep up with me, bitches scared of the name. So they hungry for the fame, and they biting on my lane, but I do not play them games. Bitches lame with no aim. It's a shame, but my name stay the same. Super fly, super fly, super fly, super, 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 super fly bitches.
Super fly niggas.
Super, 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 super fly bitches.
Super fly bitches.
Super fly, super fly, super fly, super, 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 super fly bitches.
Damn, damn girl, I know I'm looking fly.
Super fly niggas.
Super, super,
super, super fly bitches. Super fly bitches. What it do? I'm headed to the top with my crew, nice view. I'm killing bitches, RIP, I mean I got the proof. Get your dude, he is rude, that ain't cool. You a fool, if you thinking that shit cool. Where your sins go to school like a kid. Murder it, I did, if you want it, where you bit. I know I be talking shit when I eat. Bitches sleep on a beat, I'm a beast. Yeah, yo, man, he a fan, that's that shit you can't stand. Yeah, I stand at the bottom of the top. In the end, like I ill. I'm tatted and I'm sexy, but hell no, I cannot go. I got a couple bad bitches with me and we glow. Did you know that I do not rock with hoes? Super fly, super fly, super fly, super, 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 super fly bitches.
Damn, girl, I know I'm looking fly.
Super fly niggas.
Super,
super, super, super fly bitches.
Super fly bitches.
Super fly, super fly, super fly, super, 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 super fly bitches. Super fly niggas.
Gonna be our last track here tonight on the Copyright Experiment. Next up, we have Pierre with RL Tentacles.
Let's listen in as one poor soul tries to find something good to enjoy on the radio.
Let's see here,
World of Warfare, the battlefields, and death by death, this is where
God, ugh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Ugh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
Well, I climbed up the mountain, climbed back down again for you. I climbed up the mountain again for you, and then I climbed back down, climbed up.
Ugh. Isn't there
anything?
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 Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
This is how to make a great sandwich. Step 1, get the soft but sturdy bread.
Up in smoke, it's where my money goes.
Step number two, butter it with your favorite spreads. Step 3. Put in the meats and veggies. Step 4. Shake it up. Pepper, salt, and all.
And check us, sneak out. Open fridge and I drink daddy big styles. Multi refine, girl, more can reach out. And I'm anti A, more can speak out.
Step 5. Find another piece of sturdy bread. And that, my friends, is how you make a great sandwich. For more, listen to Soul Sandwich every Monday from 5 to 6 on CITR 101.9.